Yakuza. Yakuza. Yakuza Kick Radio.
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and babies, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
It's Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it. Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you couldn't. Now look at that guy, you homie. Fuck that. Black D. House.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, December 9th, 2015. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris. Man, I got a good show for you guys tonight. You know, a bunch of different things to talk about. Most importantly, tonight I got EYFBO on the show, you know, one at a time. And I do believe I have my first guest on right now, one half of EYFBO, the Funky Monkey, Angel Ortiz.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
All right. Just a little tired, just waking up, about to go to work.
Cool. So, yeah, man, you guys are absolutely killing it on the indies. I wanted to have you guys on and, you know, talk about, you know, your career and everything up to this point. What were your earliest memories of wrestling as a kid?
Earliest memories? Of course, The Undertaker, I would have to say, is like my earliest memory. I remember being like 5 or 6 years old and just remembering the purple glove for some reason. That's like my earliest side of wrestling. And for me, what really made me want to do it, like really got me into it and made me want to wrestle myself was like early Ring of Honor, Tori Mon, watching like Japanese wrestling videos and stuff like that. And yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, what year did you actually break in and decide you were going to go do wrestling?
Let me see. I would have to say about 2008. Yeah, about 2008 was when it hit for me. One of my boys, he's not in the business anymore. He was just like, yo, I found this wrestling school in Long Island, which is FTW, Earl Cooter runs it, Fight the World Wrestling. And he was just like, yo, there's this wrestling school, do you want to go try it out with me? And I was like, yeah, and I never looked back, honestly.
Yeah. Was training what you expected, or, you know, was it different than what you thought you were getting into? Because, you know, I mean, there's a lot to it that you don't know until you do it.
It was kind of what I expected. It was a little laid back. I mean, it was cool. It was hard at times, just getting used to bumps and stuff like that. It was pretty much in the wheelhouse of what I expected. I mean, I used to watch, like, everything I could get my hands on, like, as far as training. Like, I remember watching that, I think it's XPW, XWA, the John Cena training video, stuff like that. So, like,
yeah.
I remember watching that, yeah, and I was just like, all right, this is what wrestling school is about, and kind of that's what I expected going in. It's kind of felt in the wheelhouse of what I expected.
Okay, you know, I keep getting mind fucked by this too, because I first heard about you from Joel Maximo, and then your name's Angel Ortiz. So I always want to call you Joel Ortiz, because you know, Joel Ortiz. And then I did make that association because I first heard about you from Joel Maximo. But how'd you get hooked up with the Maximos and, you know, start working with those guys?
All right, so pretty much, yeah, like I said, I started at FTW. I was wrestling there. I had kind of, like, started transitioning from there and, like, working more shows. So I was, like, specifically there. And then I started working at, ICW. And me and Drastic hooked back up. Like, we were, like, friends from, like, high school. So we hooked back up, and we actually started working with each other. And then we were just talking about, like, really getting back into it, because I was kind of, like, didn't know if I wanted to continue wrestling or not at that point. And he was like, yo, we should start tagging and let's wrestle. So we wrestled Old Money is Legal up in the Bronx at this random show, and it was our first tag match again, with each other. And we clicked, and it kind of worked. So then Joel just opened up the school, and then Drastic had trained with him a while back, which I'm sure he'll tell you, back when he was training with Magic. And, you know, he had a rapport with him, and he was like, yo, let's just go down and check out his school. And we went, and he took a liking to us, and yeah. And that's where, honestly, we really started working as a tag team and really started, like, to break out and go to where we're at now.
Yeah. What is EYFBO, and how did you guys come up with that?
We came up with it with a friend, honestly. It was more his idea, because when we first started to wrestle, we wanted to be like, you know, LMFAO. That was kind of like the gimmick, but it kind of evolved definitely far from that. But we were trying to look for acronyms. So EYFBO, we usually gimmick people, but I'll say it. I'm kind of just annoyed because everyone always asks what it is, and might as well just say it. It's entertaining your fucking balls off. That's what it stands for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, how many different groups of letters have you been called? Because, I mean, it's not like a run-of-the-mill thing.
A lot of things. Can we curse on this?
Yeah.
Okay. It gets a little rated R. People come up with their own meaning of the acronym, like eating your fucking butt out, every young female, every young female enjoys orgasms or something like that. People make up their own acronym because they can't remember it, and they're just like EYBFO, whatever, yeah, whatever. People eventually get it done.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys, you know, you really started to tear it up, and you started to get in there with, you know, all sorts of, like, big known tag teams. You know, you were an indie fan, so you got in there with guys like Hosh and Benjamin. You know, what was that like getting in with those guys?
It was cool, man. They're cool dudes. I mean, it's been kind of surreal lately. Like you said, we've been wrestling a lot of upper indie guys, ex-WWE guys, ex-TNA people, and kind of just wrestling everyone. It was cool to wrestle Haas and Benjamin. They were cool dudes. They kind of relax. And it's cool wrestling that style, because they do that, you know, quote unquote WWE style. And just learning more of that is like beneficial towards, you know, growing as wrestlers. And one of our craziest moments was wrestling Ultimo Dragon in Canada, which was pretty insane, surreal to be across the ring from him. That was like that. Oh shit, this is actually happening moment. You know what I mean? That was like our mark moment. But man, it's been awesome. Like wrestling, like all these people. Like honestly, it's definitely what has made us grow as a tag team.
Yeah. So, you know, you're saying surreal, and definitely Ultimo was one of the guys I was going to mention for sure. But, I mean, you also got in there with Too Cool. What was that match like?
it was awesome. When we were going to the event, I was just like, oh, man, are these guys going to want to work? You know what I mean? Like, are they just going to be those old guys that are just going to want to hit their gimmicks and that's it, game over, 5-minute match? But they actually put in work, and they worked with us, and they gave us the respect, and we had a really good match with them. It was really cool working with them, and had that moment at the end doing a dance with them. I mark out for shit like that, so it was cool.
Yeah, and I mean other guys, you know, just big name guys like Jim Duggan, Shane Douglas. You know, what was it like, you know, with those guys?
Cool, man. I mean, we ran in with Shane a couple of times doing Fighting Spirit Wrestling, so you know. We develop more of a rapport with him. He's just a cool dude. He believes in aliens, randomly. Jim Duggan was cool. Like, all these dudes were just, like, really humble dudes. Like, none of those crazy stories about running into, like, the idols or whatever of wrestling, and they're, like, assholes and jerks. Everyone so far, fortunately, has been, like, really cool, like, down-to-earth dudes willing to, like, work with us, you know what I mean, and haven't. And they haven't, like, big leagued us or anything like that, which is awesome that we get that respect from them.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you know, you got to change your styles quite a bit because, I mean, you've worked, you know, fast-paced matches with some of those young cats and then, you know, the TV style with some of those dudes. How do you adjust to that, you know, coming up as a younger wrestler?
I think as you get older, you want to do the TV style, honestly. It just kind of, you know, like you said, we grew up with, like, Ring of Honor style and, like, you know, King Gate and all that, like, fast pace and, like, you know, American lucha stuff. But, like, that's what made me want to be a wrestler. So that's when I first started training. That's what I focused on. And then, you know, eventually that'll take you to a certain point, and then you've got to, like, really learn how to, like, work more, do more character-based stuff, you know. And it's just kind of like you wrestle to your opponent's strengths, you know what I mean? So, like, if we're going to wrestle, obviously, like, Jim Duggan's not going to do a tackle, drop down, hurricanrana, arm drag off the top rope, you know what I mean? So, it just, you know, just wrestle. We've just been able to adapt to both, you know what I mean? And honestly, more so, like, now wrestling that, like, more TV, quote-unquote TV style has been more relevant now in our career just because, you know, you just learn how to work when you get to a certain stage, you know what I mean, and just learn how to, like, slow it down, like everyone says, and just, like, really focus on, like, entertaining or just, like, you know, telling a story in the ring more so than, like, doing a bunch of cool moves, which that's cool too. You know what I mean? You just play to the crowd and,
Yeah. How did Team Pazuzu come about and you become part of that?
I would say maybe a year before Team Pazuzu really got started, we were really cool with Pinky Sanchez. And, like, Pinky, thanks to the man Carlos, he honestly helped us out kind of like breaking out of the New York City area. We just kind of like got together and like really started getting building a relationship with Pinky. And Pinky's always been cool with Dickinson and Jaka. And we just kind of all came together and like we're all into kind of like, we have the same sense of humor. We're all like kind of into the same thing. So, yeah, it just kind of naturally happened, you know what I mean? Like, just we started doing shows with each other, and then we started being on the road with each other, and then we were all talking. It's like, yo, we should do this, like, for real, because Pinky and Dickie and Jocko already kind of had Team Pazuzu going on, but they wanted to make it, like, an actual, like, thing and, like, bring it to the wrestling side more so, like, just, like, us being boys. And, yeah, it just... from traveling with each other, and it just kind of built from that, and then we finally debuted it at Beyond, and it's been working ever since. It's like, it's been an awesome year for us. Like, we've been, like you said, we've wrestled a bunch of names, like, we've wrestled all over the place, and, like, people are really, like, you know, going with the Team Pazuzu thing, and it's awesome, because it's just us being boys and just having fun, and it works.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, you know, breaking out of New York and stuff, and I always wonder because, you know, I'm from Jersey, and, you know, I watch a lot of Jersey wrestling and Philly wrestling and stuff like that, and it always seemed like New York, you know, has a good following within New York, but it's not as widespread as, like, the Philly or Jersey stuff. I don't, like, you know, House of Glory and, you know, what the Maximos were doing, they're booking top-notch cards, some of the biggest talent and stuff, but it just doesn't seem to get out there. What do you think it is about New York?
Man, I don't know. New York back in the early, like, when I got into wrestling, New York was where it's at. New York and Philly, because of, like Ring of Honor and, like, ICW back in the day was, like, popping after kind of, like, ECW went down.
Right.
Man, I don't know. I just think the talent pool, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, of course, you got the forefront of New York, like the Homicides, the Hit Squad, the SATs, Mazer Red, Brian Excel. Like, all those dudes were, like, repping New York really hard. And then, I don't know, man. I think it's just the combination of, like, them kind of stopping wrestling and, like, Ring of Honor really focusing on, like, you had, like, Ring of Honor, JAP, and, like, those, like, Jersey and Philly stuff. And then, like, I don't know, man. Like, New York, like you said, it kind of, like, drizzled down a bit. And it's been in a weird limbo. But, like, House of Glory definitely is, like, finally there's a place, you know, that you can go and wrestle in New York and, like, on a big scale. Because there hasn't been a place like that in a minute. I just think, honestly, it's just been the talent pool. But, like, now... there's a lot of hungry cats in New York, like the House of Glory guys. Five Bells is another place that they get really good talent to come in. And, yeah, I think it's on the up. But before that, to answer your question, it would probably maybe be the talent. But now there's a lot of good people coming up. So it's interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Now I got to ask you this. Now, what was the thought process when you went through and bought those shoes?
honestly, I kind of, when they first came out, you know, like the Vibrams, the toe shoes, I bought them to like work out in them, and they just, I like wearing sandals. Like, I hate wearing sneakers. I hate wearing boots unless I have to, you know what I mean? If it's snowing and shit outside, but, I bought them one day to train in them, and then, you know, I was like, because of the you know, the Funky Monkey, the gimmick, I was like, I need something different, you know what I mean? I need something different to kind of make me stand out. And I had the pair, and I was like, you know what, they match with my gear, I'm just going to wrestle with them. And I kind of stood with them ever since, and I've gotten so comfortable wrestling with them that, like, I hate wrestling in boots and, like, wrestling shoes now. So, yeah.
It
was, like, falling apart. Like, it's put together with, like, electro tape and scotch tape, and I get a lot of crap for it, but
I'm sure.
I'll wear nothing but tape if I have to.
Yeah, well, shit. I mean, if it works, it works.
Yeah,
definitely
exactly.
Stands up. So then, you know, going forward, and again, some of the guys you've been working, you know, one of the biggest tag teams on the Northeast, you know, years ago, and they really made a big, you know, resurgence recently, is the Hit Squad. And you guys got in there with the Hit Squad. What, you know, what was it like with those guys?
Man, the first match we had with them, it was like we wrestled them before at the Ludus, like a while back. But then since then, we've grown. Like, like tenfold. Like we've grown like as far as like our experience and just how our mindset was different the second time around when we wrestled them at Beyond. And it was every time you wrestle the Hit Squad, it's like, all right, you're ready to go in. You know what I mean? You don't wrestle them thinking like, oh, all right, today is going to be easy. We're just going to, you know, we're just going to do 1, 2, 3, and we're good. We don't have to worry about it. When you go to wrestle the Hit Squad, it's like, oh, shit, all right, I'm going to get ready for a fight. You know what I mean? But they're the best guys, man. Like Moth and Steve, like another group of people that's helped us out a lot. Also like Homicide and stuff like that. They're just, they're cool ass dudes, man. They're like our dads in New York. You know what I mean? They're like the forefathers of New York, like we call them. And, yeah, it's just, when we wrestle them, you get ready to fight pretty much. You know what I mean? Like it's legitimate. The hits are laying in more, the moves are upped. Yeah, it's one of those days when you know you're going to be sore the next day.
Sure. You know, another team that had mostly made their name for, you know, Chikara, but they've been pretty widespread. The Osirian Portal, what was it like working those guys? Because that's another different style.
Oh, yeah. We love wrestling them. We've only been in the ring with them a couple of times. We tagged with Ophidian. Amasis, excuse me, not Ophidian. Amasis. We tagged with Amasis in Canada, like, once, and we've been on a couple of road trips with them. So, you know, we built a friendship with them. Like, they're mad cool, and we love wrestling that, like, that lucha style, you know what I mean? Like, Chicago's another big place that, like, coming up in the business that I used to watch a lot, obviously, liking that, like, lucha background and stuff. And it's cool wrestling them because you get to do that lucha stuff. Like, we wrestle in New England a lot and Canada, and not everyone could do that style. So, like, it's fun when we get in there with people that could do that style, and we jump at it.
Yeah. Now, you know, you guys were there. You're part of the Team Pazuzu and everything else. And, you know, there was the whole controversy and whatnot over the Dickinson-Kimberly match. And I didn't have a problem with it, but it caught so much heat. And I thought it was great, but it caught so much heat. You know, being part of the team, did you catch any kind of, you know, shrapnel off of that? Because, I mean, you guys also had to tag up and, you know, wrestle JT and Kim and all that and continue to feud.
Yeah, honestly, like, it worked quite opposite. I think after that, we got cheered more, which was weird. I feel like it got more heat on the internet from the non-wrestling community and some from the wrestling community. But it was like those people that that don't watch wrestling or maybe just watch like Raw, like randomly see it on TV, those casual wrestling fans. But like I feel like our home base, like, knew what it was, and, like, the fans in FET itself, at Beyond itself, didn't really give us too much flack for it. It was more, like, outside heat, like you said. But, yeah, like, honestly, after the whole deal, we got cheered a lot more, which is weird because, you know, we're the bad guys and we're supposed to get booed, but I don't know, I guess the fans of the FET like the old ECW like craziness, you know, of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, honestly, me in particular, or I think the rest of the team honestly ever got like that much heat from it. Chris, on the other hand, got a little more heat, obviously, because he was the one dealing it out. But it wasn't that bad. It kind of like worked out, I guess. You know what I mean? So.
Sure. What's your favorite venue you've worked in thus far?
That's hard. It's either FET, Beyond Wrestling. Like, Beyond Wrestling, we consider one of our homes. House of Glory is another really good venue, but honestly, I would have to say C4 up in Canada at the Knights of Columbus. The C4 fans, the Canadian fans are like, the best. They get so into it, they're always drunk, and they're always there to have a good time. And they're the loudest. Like, even if it's a lighthouse, you feel like you're wrestling in front of, like 1,000 people.
Yeah. Big crowd you worked in front of recently in Jersey was the Jersey All-Pro wrestling Homicide and Hernandez. What was it like, you know, getting in where they're, you know, with them, with the big crowd and everything?
Yeah, it was another surreal moment, man. Like, like I mentioned before, coming up in the New York system and stuff like that, like those guys, the Homicides, the Hit Squad, like, and also wrestling the SATs and stuff, like, that's that moment that, like, you're just like, damn, man, like, this is it. Like, I feel like, honestly, like, if nothing happens tomorrow, or if I, like, I break my foot, knock on wood, and I can never wrestle again, like, I'll be all right, you know what I mean? Because I got the respect from, like, those people. Like, the reason why I'm wrestling, when I was going to shows and I would do road trips as a fan and go to see these shows, and, like, the people that I connected with and the people that I wanted to be like were those guys, like, was that New York crew, and, like, wrestling with them. And at JAP, like, when Drastic and I were talking about becoming a tag team, like, we were talking about, and, you know, when you talk with your boys, you're just shooting the shit, and you're like, yeah, we could do this and that. We were like, yeah, man, we need to start tagging so we could, like, wrestle at JAP and we could do some tag shit. And he's like, yeah, we should, you know what I mean? And, like, it happened, which was crazy. And, like, it was, like, maybe 2.5 years ago, and we were just shooting the shit at work. And it was like, who would think, like, all right, we actually, you know, put our money where our mouth was at, and, like, wrestling them in front of that crowd. And unfortunately, you know, it was a memorial show.
Right.
That Frank, that was a pretty hard moment to deal with, because a lot of our closer friends in wrestling, they were really close with him. I didn't know him too much. I met him maybe like one time before that, but I mean, in that aspect, it was cool to honor him. You know what I mean? I wish he could have been there to see it, because
sure.
You know, he's definitely a person that we wanted to impress, and going in, that was one of our goals, to go in and impress him. But yeah, it was another surreal moment. It's like one of those big moments in wrestling. Like, I seem to be having a lot of those this year, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I know you guys got a lot to go, and, you know, plenty of places to work and people to work. But if you had to put together three of your favorite matches up until this point, what would those three matches be?
Oh man, three matches. Definitely the Hit Squad at Beyond, the first one we did at Beyond. Let's see. Definitely Ultimo Dragon at C4. And let me see. A third one. Recently, I would have to say the House of Glory match that we had with the Private Party for the House of Glory straps. Because I feel like... me and Josh were talking about this, like, we were having, like, the string of, like, matches where, you know, as the fans liked them or whatever, but personally, because we're, like, perfectionists, we're like, nah, we could do better, we want to do better, because, like, House of Glory is such a big venue, and then, like, we went in with that mentality, like, when we wrestled the Private Party that match, and, yeah, we had a really good match with them. So, up to date, I would say those three matches that I could think of.
Okay.
If I'm missing anything else, I'm sorry if I offend someone.
But so I mean, who are some dream matches you got? Some, you know, teams you want to work or guys you're trying to work out there?
Me personally, I want to work we definitely want to work the Young Bucks.
Sure.
Briscoe Brothers, they're one of my top tag teams. Bravados, definitely Motor City Machine Guns, but I don't think that'll ever happen. Yeah, like all those early like 2000 tag teams that like made a name for themselves. Like we wrestled some of them, but offhand, those who I can think of that I really, really, really want to wrestle at the moment.
Yeah. Now, you know, with such a, you know, flow of guys really making it up into the NXT realms and stuff, is that your goal, or do you know, you got your focus on something else?
I would say, I mean, TV is kind of where we want to head to next after the year that we had, maybe like Ring of Honor or like TNA or something like that. But, you know, I'm sure it'll come with time, but like we're just focusing like maybe one show at a time, just trying to get on more shows, you know what I mean? And
sure,
just wrestling more places. Like, you know, I feel like it's going to come. Like I'm pretty patient, and you kind of have to be in wrestling because sometimes things can happen like out of nowhere, you know what I mean? Or it could take a really long time for it to happen. Because people wrestle for, like, 10, 15 years until they make it somewhere. But, yeah, like, just wrestling more and just like expanding our reach. Like, we definitely want to go internationally, more so than just Canada. Try to get to Mexico, try to get to the West Coast. That's kind of like our focus. And kind of like, we want that career where we wrestle everywhere. Go to Europe, Japan, Mexico, and like everything, and then maybe do the TV round. You know, like, more old school way of like coming up in the business. That's kind of what we want to do as a team. I'm sure Jurassic will tell you the same.
Yeah. So yeah, man. You know, is there anything you want to plug, put out there?
Yeah, sure. We got House of Glory this Friday. We're wrestling the Private Party again. I'm sure we'll have a ill match. If people are listening in the area, please come through. You could Facebook it, Google. I'm sorry, I'm horrible at plugs. Yeah, and beyond, if at the end of the month, on the 27th, I believe, if you're in the Rhode Island area, or even if you're not, it's going to be a really good show. It's the last show we're going to have at the FET, probably for a really long time. So I'm sure Drew Cordero is going to put a crazy card together, and it's going to be an ill match. Plus, you get to see Team Pazuzu. So, yeah, definitely Beyond House of Glory this Friday, Beyond at the end of the month. Yeah, and if you want to follow me, you can do FM Angel Ortiz on Twitter, or just Angel LCC Ortiz on Facebook, or EYFBO. You could look us up. I'm always sharing wrestling posts. It's kind of what I use social media for. So if you don't want constant wrestling posts shared on your newsfeed, then don't follow me. But that's pretty much it.
All right. All right, man. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. I'd definitely like to have you back on in the future. And, you know, I hope to see a lot more. You're out there just killing it.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thank you for having me on. And thank you for having Drastic on as well, I'm sure, which will be on in a few. And, yeah, I appreciate it, man. Like, this is probably, like, the second ever podcast that I did. Yeah, it was cool. It was fun, man. Thank you.
Good shit, man. Have a good night.
All right, bro. You too.
I have on the line the other half of EYFBO, Mike Drastic.
Hey,
what's going
man?
On, man?
How's it going, guys?
Good, good. So yeah, man, got finished talking to your partner, and you know, wanted to get you on. You guys have absolutely been killing it. What were your earliest memories of wrestling?
Earliest memories? Wow. I like to say the earliest moment of me watching wrestling is probably WrestleMania 7. And, I mean, seeing the Nasty Boys versus the Hart Foundation was pretty much what sparked me. It's the most random match ever, but, yeah, that's the first, like, memory I have of watching wrestling.
Who was your favorite guys as a kid?
One, Bret Hart, and who else? Of course, like, I mean, during that time, you know, growing up, you were either a Bret Hart fan or you were a Shawn Michaels fan, you know. And I was always a big Bret fan, but also like when Bret faded out, and I became a big Shawn Michaels fan and stuff. So, yeah,
right. So what made you decide to get into wrestling? What sparked you to do that, and how'd you get into that?
Well, I mean, it was something that I started training when I was 17 out in Staten Island. And, I mean, I was in high school once. I had just moved to Staten Island from the city. And, you know, I was a pretty troubled kid, I'd say. And pretty much I looked at wrestling to change my shit around, you know what I mean? And to try to get out of the whole street thing and all that crap. And it's always been something I wanted to do, you know, growing up. And it's always been a passion. And, I mean... Yeah, and then I started going to school, and I met this kid that was like, hey, there's a wrestling school out here that I go to and stuff, and I was like, whoa, that's fucking awesome. I didn't really know of any wrestling schools or anything at that time. And, yeah, one day he took me, and it was actually Magic, Andrew Morgan. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him. He's from Staten Island. And I remember meeting Magic for the first time and, you know, talking with him a little bit and telling him, you know, I'm still in school and stuff like that. And, yeah, and I told him how passionate I was about it. And he, I was still in school at the time, so he was like, hey, I'd love to train you. You seem very passionate and you know, something that you really want to do. But before anything, I want you to finish high school. And
right.
And to me, that was, you know, that right there, that moment right there, like, set me off, you know what I mean? And he, for him to do that, like, I, to this day, I appreciate, you know, I appreciate that. Because honestly, if I would have started going to wrestling school while I was still in high school, I don't think I would have been going to school.
Right.
But yeah, man, I was thankful that he did that. And honestly, as soon as I got my diploma, I didn't go to graduation, which I still get heat from my family about. I didn't go to graduation. I didn't go to prom. The next day, I went straight to Magic and handed him my diploma. And the rest is, you know, history, I guess.
So when you got into actually training and everything, was it what you expected, or, you know, how hard was it? Because, you know, it takes a lot of doing it to actually know what it is to go through it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I was one of those kids, you know, at a young age that was, of course, had friends that did backyard wrestling and all that stuff. So I was into that whole thing. And coming in, it was like, wow, like, there's just so much to it, you know what I mean? Growing up and watching wrestling, you don't really know what's going on. You don't really, you follow the stories and your favorite people, and you cheer and you boo, you know what I mean? And like, you don't realize how much of an art it is. And it was definitely not what I expected. And
right.
Yeah, like, Magic busted our asses. And I definitely learned a lot from him.
How long was it before you clicked up with Angel?
We hooked up. Well, me and Angel have known each other for years. He was actually one of the kids that I used to do backyard wrestling with.
okay.
And, yeah, we've known each other since we were, like, 14, 15 years old. And, you know, we separated. We went our own ways. We started growing up, doing our own things. And I'd say around 2010, we hooked back up. Then we started working together. And from there, we were like, hey, he noticed my passion. I noticed his. And we clicked. And, yeah, we were like, hey, why not? Let's do it. Let's see what we can do with it. And, yeah.
When did you realize that, you know, you and Angel were going to be like a, you know, because sometimes they throw tag teams together, you do that, you know, singles tag team and kind of flip back and forth. But when did you realize that it was going to be, like, the thing to do when you guys click so well?
I'd say, because when we hooked up and got together, we had started going to train under the SATs. And, you know, the SATs are like, you know, back then they were tag team wrestling, you know. And
right.
And training under them and learning and stuff like that and us training together and noticing the chemistry and all that stuff. Like, I'd say when we got to do the first National Pro Wrestling Day, and we we wrestled the SATs, and I'd say after that match and you know, experiencing that, because that was like the biggest thing we've ever done at that time, and experiencing that and like just noticing our passion, and that was like, all right, we're on to something, and you know, it's looking good.
Yeah. Now you guys spent a lot of time in New York, and you know, Angel was even saying that, you know, it took a while for you guys to be able to really break out of New York. What do you think it is that keeps that New York indie scene somewhat in the dark? I mean, there's a lot of talent out there, and you know, House of Glory does like big time matches. It just doesn't seem to get the same exposure, even like a Jersey or a Philly gets. What do you think that is?
That's a good question, man. Like you were saying, there's so much talent here in New York. You know, a lot of people that aren't known and guys don't know about and stuff like that. But I don't know, man. I feel like New York was so quiet for so long that I feel like people forgot, you know, they forgot about what New York gave to independent wrestling. I feel like, you know, especially back then when independent wrestling was like booming, a lot of you know, the main guys were from New York. And after that, after guys started dying out and you know, doing their own thing and slowing down or whatever, so, like, people forgot, you know. But like you said, House of Glory is definitely doing it big, and I feel like they're the ones that are bringing it back, you know what I mean? They're the ones right now holding down New York City. And to me, they're doing a fantastic job, man. Like, Red and Brian XL have this shit down to a science. You know, and not only that, but they're grooming their students for greatness. You know, I think Amazing Red is one of the greatest teachers around. You know, being able to learn from him and speak with him and all this stuff, like, he's amazing, man. I think they're doing great, and they're bringing New York City back up and putting us back on the map, and I could only imagine where things are going to go in the next few years, you know.
Sure. Now, you know, coming up wrestling, you know, guys like the Maximos, you've wrestled so many different, you know, teams and so many different styles. You wind up in the ring with Too Cool. Yeah, how was that, and, you know, what was that like?
Well, that was an experience, man. Like, of course, Too Cool was the big thing back then when a lot of us were growing up. So getting to just be in the ring and stand across the ring from these guys was wow. It took me back to 1998 watching Monday Night Raw, you know what I mean? And it was great, man. It was a great experience. Sky Too High is amazing, and he is still an animal in the ring. Brian Christopher was great, you know, and like, we got along well, all four of us, and it clicked, and it was a great experience, man. I definitely got to learn. I feel like from them we took away being able to put together like a TV match, you know what I mean? It was definitely a learning experience and a good time, and thank those guys, man.
Yeah, and then in Canada, you got to wrestle Ultimo Dragon. What was that like?
Well, funny. It's funny you ask. It's a pretty funny story. At first, getting up, well, when we found out, it was like, oh, shit. That's for real. And then, of course, when they advertised it and announced it, it was like, all right, this is really going down, you know. And, you know, it was very exciting. And then getting there, the promoter comes to us, and he's like, all right, listen, guys, Ultimo Dragon is pretty pissed off because he lost his bags earlier in the day. The airline lost his bags. And so he had to deal with trying to reclaim his stuff all day, and he was in a pretty shitty mood. And so we're like, oh, so it's probably going to be one of those days. And we go into his locker room, and we go to introduce ourselves. And, you know, he was fine. He was there with some people. And out of nowhere, I guess me and Angel, we both have like tattoos of the Puerto Rican flag, and I guess he noticed them. So he looks at our tattoos and he goes, "Eres Boricua," in Spanish, and which means, "Are you Puerto Rican?" And, like, to me, it was a shock. But then I remembered, oh, shit, he spent most of his career in Mexico and you know, of course, speaking Spanish and stuff like that. So once we started communicating in Spanish, he opened up, he got comfortable, he started joking around, and, yeah, man, it was amazing. Like, being in the ring with that guy, he still has it, he can still go, and it was great, man. He wanted to work with us, and yeah, man, like, shit, exciting, really exciting time.
Now, you know, what was your biggest moment so far? Was it across the ring from Ultimo Dragon?
As far as, like, work, the people we've worked with, like...
Or, yeah, just as far as being surreal, like, you being in the ring with somebody.
Oh, yeah. Being surreal, yeah. Well, that was definitely a surreal moment, definitely, for us. And another moment was doing, when I first started training with Magic, surprising, like, the guy who owned the school had a lot of connections with some people and stuff, and he brought in Brett to do a seminar, and I got to, you know, do a little practice match in front of Brett, and having him critique and sit there and watch, and, like, I, you know, like I said, Brett is my favorite wrestler of all time, and
right,
that experience was Jesus, like, I still can't explain it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So then going, I mean, you guys, another big team that you guys wrestled, you know, indie guys turned WWE guys, and Haas and Benjamin. And what was it like wrestling those guys?
That was fun as well, man. That was a good time. Benjamin is an animal also in the ring. Like, he can go. Like, that guy does not, he's a machine. He does not get tired. Haas was really cool, you know, it was really good, really good. That was another thing. We learned a lot from them and working with them and how to put together matches and stuff like that. It was really cool. They were really cool guys.
Yeah. Now, when you guys came up with the EYFBO, are there any other names that you guys kicked around, or, you know, did you guys
actually
immediately land on that?
Yeah, actually, we were in a car ride heading up to Rhode Island doing some small show, and before we were just Drastic and Ortiz, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the car with a few friends, and at the time we were trying to do the whole, like, party rock, you know, gimmick or whatever that everybody was trying to do at that time. And, you know, we were like, yeah, we got to come up with a cool acronym. And then actually one of our friends came up with it, and we were like, all right, sounds cool. And then we came up with a meaning, and yeah, I guess it stuck.
Nice. How often does that get, like, mistaken, or, you know, they throw all their letters out, or, you know, whatever the case is? Because it isn't the easiest to remember.
I'm sure you guys have seen it a lot. I see guys, I mean, hey, man, whatever. It happens all the time. We either get, hey, what does it stand for, or what's the order of the letters, or, but now I guess it's coming around a little bit.
Cool, you know, you guys, you wrestled another team that, you know, was just one of the biggest teams, you know, through the early 2000s, even late 90s, the Hit Squad. You know, what was it like getting in there with those guys? They were crushing the indies for the longest time. They're making a huge resurgence now. And, you know, you guys are the new breed.
Wow. Well, working with them was, I mean, like I said, you know, growing up and watching the indies, I got into the indies when I was about 13 or 14. And I used to go to Frank Goodman shows, USA Pro. They used to last forever. and I used to watch his squad on VHS tapes, you know what I mean? And those guys are always guys that I always looked up to and respected, and respected what they were doing and the work they were putting in, and especially representing, you know, the city. And, yeah, there's just so much love and respect I have for those guys, man. Like, they've helped us so much, so much. And like, and it's pretty surreal because, you know, us growing up watching the indies, these guys were superstars, you know, to us. These guys were the guys we looked up to and watching them on tapes and all this stuff. And then here we are, you know, friggin' 10 years later or what have you, and we're standing across the ring from them and learning from them, and they are, you know, our friends. We can actually call each other friends, and it's pretty surreal, and it's amazing. Like, those guys we owe so much to, because without the his squad, there is no EYFBL, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned Frank Goodman. What's your thoughts on Frank Goodman overall?
That what? Sorry?
You mentioned Frank Goodman.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on Frank Goodman and the way he, you know, he runs shows and stuff?
I mean, hey, back then I was still a kid, so I didn't really get it, you know. The shows were always crazy and exciting, and it was just straight madness. And I remember fucking riots, man. And, yeah, like, it was just nuts. It just sucked that they would end at, like, 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like, it was cool. Like, I never really met the guy. I don't know the guy like that. So I've just
heard
insane stories, you know.
Yeah.
But, of course, everyone has their opinions and has their stories in wrestling, and some are good and some are bad. You just, you know, you take it for what it is.
He was big on the ticket seller matches, and I that's probably what had you there until 2 o'clock in the morning. Has any promoters tried to you know, suck you into that type of mentality?
Thankfully, no. Thankfully, we've never really had to deal with anything like that. I feel like when we've approached promoters or whoever, you know, we approach them very professional, and you know, our experience, well, I mean, even back then when we were starting up, we never really had to deal with that, surprisingly.
Right.
But yeah, like, whatever.
Yeah. Now, one of the first times I heard about you is because, you know, I had Joker on, and Joker was talking about he was pretty much leaving wrestling. He was tired of the bullshit. A lot of it was because of DJ Hyde, but
yeah,
he had pretty much amongst all of that mentioned that now he was going to go wrestle you. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, like, I had never heard about you before, and, you know, I knew Joker as a killer. I mean, he's, you know, he's a dominant dude, so I'm like, oh, shit,
yeah.
Who's this kid, you know? So what was it like, you know, he obviously, you know, in retrospect, had a lot of respect for you and, you know, wanted to work you because, you know, he looked at you with, you know, some sort of respect, so it was way different than it came off on paper initially to me. What was it like, you know, wrestling Joker?
It was amazing, like, to have, and I'm sure you know, and everybody else, to have that guy's respect is truly something special. You know what I mean? He doesn't give it out to a lot of people. And you know, a young punk kid from NYC just trying to make something happen and make some noise. You know what I mean? I was nobody, and for him to do that for me at that time meant the world. You know, because that was actually my first match back from a neck injury. I was out for maybe like 7 to 8 months before that match. And through that, like, throughout that time, we would talk a lot and text each other back and forth and stuff like that. And Joker was another one of those guys that I respected and looked up to. So yeah, that was truly something special to me that I'll hold on to forever, man. Because at that time, you know, just starting out, I was nobody. And for a guy like him to give me that respect and for me to have that privilege is, you know, it's pretty cool.
Right.
Just Joker as the wrestler, but, you know, Bill Posada, like, an amazing human being. You know, he's he's an amazing father, amazing family guy. Like, I respect him in and out of the ring, man. He's an amazing dude.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'd ask Angel, and, you know, you guys are part of the, you know, Team Pazuzu. You guys all clicked up. And obviously, you know, the big internet buzz was the Dickinson-Kimberly incident. And you guys, you know, continued the angle. You had, you know, you guys wrestled JT and Kimberly and kept the angle going. And, you know, what was the backlash of that like on your end? I liked it, but, you know, it caught its internet heat.
Yeah, I mean, it's all on how, like I said, everyone has their opinions and how they see things. And, yeah, man, but that's what wrestling is about, right? The shock, the, you know, the excitement, the wanting to believe, you know what I mean? And those two did was they made everyone believe. They did their job as professional wrestlers. Do I think it went too far? No, not at all. Kimberly is a tough girl, like everyone knows, and she's taking her hits. And like she knew what she was getting into, you know, when stepping to Dickinson and you know that and all that other. But yeah, like I feel like it was great. It was exactly what everyone needed, and it you know, it got its heat, and people liked it. And like I said, everyone has their own opinion. It is what it is. The angle was fun.
Yeah,
we had a lot of fun, and you know, it's still going. So
So recently at the Jersey All Pro Show, you guys wrestled Homicide and Hernandez, you know, and it was a big emotional night, huge crowd, Fat Frank's review show and everything else. What was that show like for you?
Wow. The show, just being there in the building was, it's hard to put into words, man. Like, Jersey All Pro was one of the first places that I discovered in indie wrestling. And again, watching those VHS tapes and stuff, wow. Like, I remember watching the tapes and always them, like you know, having the hard cam looking towards the bleachers and stuff like that. And you always saw the Jersey All Pro banners at the top. So I remember first getting to the building, and it was still empty and stuff, and just looking up at those banners like, wow, this is insane. Like, I'm here. Like, you know, and it was definitely a great experience and a great time. And we're just, you know, we're upset that Frank wasn't there, you know. And yeah, like you said, it was emotional. It was, you know, but at the end of the day, it was celebrating his life and celebrating the, you know, what he put in to the business and all that, you know. And getting to stand across the ring from Homicide and Hernandez they were one of the top tag teams in Jersey All Pro, and you know, guys we respect and looked up to and stuff like that. So it was definitely a surreal moment.
Yeah. You guys got a lot left to go. You guys are going to be a lot of places, work a lot of people. But if you had to pick three matches out of what you've done thus far to say your favorite three matches, what would those matches be?
I'd say the Hit Squad, the first Hit Squad match, I think it was in May, when we worked them at Beyond. That match, who else? Jesus. I've gotten hit in the head a lot, so bear with me.
All right.
Hit Squad. And a lot of the Pazuzu matches we've done, man, like we've, you know, when we tag up with each other, it's so fun and so great, man. Like, those are really fun times.
Man, that's tough, man. Put me on the spot. But yeah, definitely the Hit Squad is up there. Who else? I don't know, man. That's a tough question. There's so many. There's so many good ones that we really enjoyed, you know. But that one Hit Squad match is what really stands out to me.
Okay. What's your favorite venue you've wrestled in thus far?
Ooh, that's tough. Of course, Rahway, the Rec Center, was one of my favorites, and probably the biggest crowd we've worked in front of. Music, of course, for Beyond Wrestling. That music is an amazing. Just the atmosphere in that building, man. It really like puts the whole show together. And the Amazura, the House of Glory, man. Like that place is amazing. Yeah. Those three.
Who are some dream matches you got? Got you know, guys you haven't worked yet that you're really looking to, you know, get in there with?
One of them are the Bucks, of course. I feel like that you know, there's no bullshit when they say they're the best tag team in the world. That's for real, you know. The Bucks. Who else? Los Pendejos from down in Florida. Definitely a dream match that we've been wanting to work on for a while. And who else? Gosh, there's a few. Those two at the moment, right now.
All right. What are some places you're looking to work, some goals, you know, where you're looking to get, at least in the near future?
The near future, I mean, I feel like our goal for 2016 is to get into some of the major companies, you know what I mean? Ring of Honor, CZW, Shikara, you know, PWG, all the big ones, you know what I mean? I feel like that's going to really put us up there. And, you know, that's our main thing now. Also getting some TV time, you know?
Right, for sure. I mean, you know, coming up and now that the doors have opened so much as far as the NXT road is gone and, you know, so many of these indie guys are making it, does it give you guys a lot more hope as far as, you know, possibilities of the big time?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Especially the past, you know, I'd say year or two, like, I feel like, you know, wrestling on TV has shown you that anything is possible. and anyone could do it, you know what I mean? You just got to have the drive and the determination, man, and do what you got to do. But it's definitely, you know, seeing a lot of guys that we know personally, you know, get signed, and it's great. And it makes us believe, and we will be there. We will. Like, me and Angel, we strongly believe that we'll be there, man. It's only a matter of time.
Sure, man. Yeah, is there anything else you want to put out there, plug, anything else?
I mean, I really, this Friday is House of Glory in the Amazura in Queens. Everyone should definitely be there. They always, like you said, they always put on hot shows. Beyond Wrestling at the end of the month is probably going to be their last show at FET, and I'm sure you know it's going to be something big and something good for everyone. Twitter Drastic Measures, on Facebook you can find me at Mike Drastic or our like page EYFBO. Keep supporting independent wrestling, guys.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, man. I definitely want to have you back on in the future. You guys are killing it. You know, I don't expect that to stop anytime soon. So, sure, going to have a lot more to ask you guys. And thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Thanks for having us. It means a lot, man. Like, it's pretty cool when people want to hear your story, you know, and interested in stuff. So thank you, man. I really
Absolutely. Anytime, man. And like I said, you're welcome back anytime. And thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
No doubt. Thank you.
Have a good night, man.
All right. You too, brother. Later.
Yeah. So there you go. That was EYFBO. First Angel, then Mike Drastic. You know, great guys. Love talking to both of those guys. They are absolutely killing it. That, I mean, you're talking about the future of tag team wrestling. I mean, these guys are killing it. And not even the future, the fucking present. Because when you talk about dream matches, you're putting EYFBO in there with guys like the Bucks. You're putting, you know, the Briscoes, those type of guys, just like they were mentioning. So, you know, it's some real shit, man. You got to check out what they're doing out there. You know, check out all the different things they're doing on Beyond, because they're just tearing it up, man. Let me take a quick break. I don't have a ton of other shit to talk about. I already covered a whole lot of the CZW Cage of Death coming up this weekend. I'll talk a little shit about that, but I'm gonna play this Red Man track and come back. And yeah, all right, Jerry. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I say, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car.
I said, dope man, that's who I am. I got lyrics by the pounds and I sell them for grams. I don't sell crack, I sell coke. Bitch, I'm a star. The lyrics I sell is dope, 10,000 a bar. You can wreck me in Saran, make sure that I'm fresh. Put a stamp for your product right there on my chest. My transporter, KRS-One, let's chop it up. Cause this product killer, nigga, get you a tux. I got crack baby rap fans after the drug. The more they buy, cha-ching, bigger my check stub. Call me Mr. Pusher Man, it's dope in your ears. More money, I can cut it, get DJ Premier. You can fly me overseas and the dogs won't smell. London and Paris, you got mail. I'm the American gangster, I carry the weight. And when the fans watch it, homie, I put more on the plate. Let's go. Hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. It's like every hood waiting for my music to buy. And when I'm done, ears ringing like package arrived. Women strung out, they copping 2 for $5. They get a half a metaphor and a piece of a punchline. Now I'm off to Canada, I'm high in demand. My passport not working.
Try it again.
I got drug dealers waiting like 5 in a band. They unloading my shit, getting high from their hands. It's the raw uncut, Eddie Delirious. The underground recognized and Rand we trust. Even your neighborhood saying Rand you're tough. Little kids idolizing when I pull up. You can call a hotline, Reggie ready for work. 1-800, fuck with a nigga, this New Jersey. I'll take your credit debit or Amex card to cop the gold chain, nigga, with the fancy car. Hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man, you're a star. I let you go chain in your fancy car. I said, hey, Mr. Dope Man.
Yeah, it's good to hear Redman back on some shit. Unfortunately, I don't really like too much of the rest of his album he put out. I don't know. It's just not shit isn't as thorough as that track is. So, but yeah, I'm gonna get into the CZW card in a little bit. Just a minute. Something happened over this weekend as far as the wrestling world. They had a Chikara show. Now, I don't, you know, nobody would think I would even mention the word Chikara on my show because I never give a shit about Chikara. But one of the realest things in
Chikara and always has been is Eddie Kingston, which, you know, I'm a huge fan of Eddie. You know, he's been on the show a couple times. He's a great dude. And beyond anything else he does, I mean, he's a great wrestler. Love watching that dude, you know. I mean, he's wrestled, you know, a bunch of different matches that, you know, are top notch. I mean, right up there. I mean, his matches with Hiro, just tremendous shit all over the place. I mean, back when he wrestled the Necro Butcher, CZW title, and, you know, I mean, he's a great wrestler. Love watching that dude. But beyond any of that, the dude is legitimately one of the best promo cutters in the entire business, man. That's including WWE, any other bullshit you want to put up there. I'm telling you, this dude, he cuts promos like you're supposed to. And the thing about his promos is, I mean, you get all the emotion. You get the story, it builds, you know, the passion is there. I mean, it really just, you know, it takes you through, you know, a whole story, a whole wave of emotions. It really does something rather than the dude just standing there going, I'm going to come out there and I'm gonna beat you up. I'm going to fucking kill you. Yeah, whatever people say, for the most part, it becomes pretty generic. When you go at the different things that Kingston does with his promos emotionally and you know, what he puts together, it makes you give a fuck about the card. Like, I all of a sudden wanted to see the main event of that Chikara show. Again, I don't give a shit about Chikara, but I was like, fuck, man, like, I wonder what's going to happen in that match, because he sold the event. And that's what a promo is supposed to do. A big, big problem I have with CZW is there's none of that. Now, going into Cage of Death, maybe I'm wrong and I might miss a couple promos or something like that, but from what I could think off the top of my head, the promos they cut was, well, they had Greg Excellent cut a promo, which was good, and he's doing like a serious gimmick, and he cut a promo, you know, saying a bunch of shit as far as like people didn't take him seriously and he's about tired of it, and yeah, he got a good promo. So it's leading into a match that he's going to have against Tony Nese, because he wanted top-notch competition. Obviously, Tony Nese is a great wrestler. You know, I think, you know, they could really do some good shit with this. Now, part of the problem here is CZW doesn't even follow through with their own story. It doesn't even connect with what point they're trying to make with a storyline or a gimmick. Because right on their posters, you still got Greg Excellent smiling ear to ear, long beard, which he doesn't have anymore, smiling ear to ear, big fucking baby face Greg Excellent, and, you know, fun-loving Greg Excellent, which is not what he's doing right now. So it really takes you away from that shit, you know what I mean? Because you're trying to accomplish one thing in the ring, one thing on promos, and then they just put up a poster that just shits on the entire gimmick. There's just no dedication to what they're trying to sell, and this is the problem. Okay, so there's a Greg Excellent promo. So they've already kind of buried that with what they're doing, with their advertisement, with, you know, and you could pull it back together with the performance you put out there. So I'm not saying, hey, you know, all is lost. I'm just saying, you know, there's no commitment on all fronts to make it do what it's supposed to do. There's no attention to detail in CZW, and that's a huge, huge part of fucking CZW's failure. All right, so there's that. There's David Starr cutting a promo. Now, David Starr has pretty much booked himself against Sami Callihan. Now, I don't, you know any backstage or inner workings or anything like that to know how it actually came about. You know, maybe someone else really wanted to see that, but either way, we knew Sami Callihan was going to return to CZW. As far as I'm concerned, Sami Callihan doesn't even need to have a match in CZW on the night of Cage of Death. If he came out there, anybody was in the ring, he squashed them within 30 seconds, cut a welcome back promo. In my personal opinion, the way that it should absolutely go with Sami is he should go out there, squash whoever. Obviously, David Starr painted the target on his back. He should squash David Starr in no time at all and cut his promo and then go away. And then at the end of the night, and that should happen
sort of early in the card. And I know, you know, I mean, if this shit happens, I don't know how many people even listen to my show, so I don't know if there's a big spoiler alert or whatever. I don't write anything for CZW, so I don't know what the fuck happens. And, you know, this is just my guesswork and saying what I think should happen. And whether you knew it was going to happen or not, I think it's still the best fucking thing to be done, whether it's predictable or not. So, Cage of Death ends, fucking Sammy comes running out and attacks the fucking champion, you know, regardless of who the champion is. And that's who the fuck he should fight in February. And that's it. You know, Sammy should be challenging for the fucking titles in February. In my opinion, the fucking Hit Squad should attack the fucking tag champs after the match, and they should be going against the tag champs in February. You want to sell the fucking February show? Have the fucking Hit Squad lined up against your tag champs and Sammy Callahan lined up against your world champ. And fucking February is sold already. Motherfuckers want to see that shit. Boom. You know what I mean? You already have something in the fucking bag. Instead of that, CZW is doing this whole, maybe they have something planned, but they're doing this whole, well, we're taking January off to reevaluate everything, and we don't know who we're booking and what we're doing and this, and so we're going to take January off to think about it. Like, I don't know how you're going to cold sell that shit out of the fucking a month of absence. I'm not saying a month of absence is bad, but I'm just saying, setting something up with Cage of Death would be a fucking nice idea, you know, to get a little bit of a ball rolling. And so that's what I think should happen. I don't think that there's a chance in hell that it's going to make a difference if Sammy Callahan has some classic match with David Starr. I don't think that makes any sense. I don't think it would make a difference. Sammy's going to get the biggest reaction in the building, period. I mean, he doesn't have to lift the fucking finger. So why would he need to go out there and have a classic match with David Starr? That shit could happen 3 months down the road, and then it's fine. Then it means something because he's back, and he's back in full swing, and, you know, and you can have all your classic matches. But to have that on the night of your entrance, where you could really just go out there, climb the fucking turnbuckles, and get just as big a pop as if you wrestled a five-star match. So why waste your fucking crowd on that? You know what I mean? To me, it doesn't make any sense. So you got a promo out of David Starr, and, you know, CZW didn't even mention that on their website. They obviously put up the promo that he cut and all of that stuff, said Sammy's coming back and all this, but they still didn't write, like, this is the match happening, and David Starr is advertising this is the match happening on his page. So, again, there's no consistency within CZW, attention to detail, any of that shit. And then the other guy who's cutting promos is Matt Tremont. Matt Tremont's the best promo guy in CZW, and he's the world champion. He doesn't have shit to prove. You got three fucking challengers who aren't cutting promos for the fucking main event. You got Masada, you got AR Fox, and you got Devin Moore. And none of these guys are cutting promos. Those are the guys who should be cutting promos, you know, towards the champ. Instead of the champ cutting promos like he has something to prove when he's the one holding the belt. Shit doesn't make any sense, but, you know, my point in going into all this with the promos, because to me, you need to sell your event. And if there's an event that needs to be hyped as the biggest thing on the fucking planet to CZW and CZW fans, it's Cage of Death. There should be nothing bigger. There should be nothing higher. So to leave it as like, I really don't have much hype going into it. That's fucking crazy. Absolutely fucking crazy. So this is a promo that Eddie Kingston cut going into the Chikara show. Just check it out. We'll talk some more.
People ask me why I call the Grand Championship her. You see, as a 33-year-old man, the only time I felt love or wanted to give love out was when I had the Grand Championship, when I had her. For 33 years, I've had a hole in my chest that could not be filled by anything in this life but her. When I held her at night, when I defended her in that ring, it gave me peace. It gave me calm. It gave me a purpose. Icarus, do you understand? Hollow Wicked, do you understand how it feels to walk this earth and not have a purpose? For 33 years to walk around in life not knowing what you are meant for. Just aimlessly wandering around. When I got her, I knew why I was here. I knew why God put me on this green earth, was to protect her, to be with her, to love her. She is more than a title. She is way more than a belt. She is the love of my life. And Icarus, you took her from me. I hate you. I hate the air that you breathe. I hate the fact that you're even living. You make me sick. You should not be alive. You should not breathe the same air I breathe. You are scum. You are below me. You will always be number two. And at the season finale, for you taking her away from me, from you taking my peace, my calm that I've been looking for my whole life, I will bury you. And right before the daylight dies out of your eyes, Icarus, you're going to see me laughing and smiling. But now when I get done with you, I'm looking at you, Hollow Wicked. There's nothing personal with you. There's nothing deep with you like there is with Icarus. But you hold her. You hold my wife. You hold my love. So I'm going to bust your gut open. And I'm going to watch you die at the season finale. And then she will finally come back to me. And days before I turn 34 years old, 14 years in this great sport, I will have my purpose again. And I will have my life one more time. This is deeper than anything in the world. Anything in wrestling. This is life. This is purpose. This is everything. Everything.
How good is that motherfucking promo, man? How, yo, there is not a lot better than that. There's just not. I mean, come on, man. That is how you sell a fucking show. I don't give a fuck what show it is, where it is, who it's for. That's how you sell a show. I mean, that shit. Yo, that is the craziest shit, man, right there. That should be what everybody out there who grabs a fucking mic strives for. That type of passion, that type of storytelling, that type of investment in their fucking craft. You know, Kingston even said a while ago, and I'm sure, you know, he's not the first to say it, but he said, you know, you are the product that you put out there. So if you don't put out the best product, why would anybody buy it? Why would you be upset that nobody bought it? You know, if you don't go and you don't train yourself in the gym, you don't go and you don't invest into your promos, you don't go in and put out the best product you can, then you can't be upset about people not booking you, people not, you know, fans not being happy with what's going on or whatever the case is, and you not making what you can out of your career in the business, because it's really on you to make the best out of the product that you're putting out there. You are the product. So, you know, and it's true, you know. Another thing he said, and again, he's not the first or the last to say it, and, you know, you always got to look back to that.
DJ Hyde, fuck you.
You know, because, I mean, it's just one of those things. So, look, CZW's card, Cage of Death. Here we go. This is, again, Sami Callihan returning to CZW, which I already explained, you know, what I think should happen and what's, you know, line to happen or whatever else. Greg Exlin versus Tony Nese. Big smiling Greg Exlin on the website versus Tony Nese. This could be good. You know, Greg can go. I've always said that. That's why I hated the Dick Justice thing so much, because I really felt like it downgraded Greg to a guy who couldn't go, and it just went so far into the comedy realm that I felt like it diminished what he can actually do in the ring. Now, you know, I mean, maybe I'm being picky, maybe I'm being, you know, petty as far as the way one match is portrayed or whatever, but I just know Greg can do a lot more physically in the ring and compete, and I prefer to see that out of Greg. So I do believe we're going to see that across the ring from Tony Nese. So there's that. They got the Amazing Gulaks versus the Beaver Boys. And
I personally wish this was a four-way for the tag titles rather than just Team Tremendous versus TV Ready. I think if they put Team Tremendous, TV Ready, the Amazing Gulaks and the Beaver Boys all, you know, in a big tag match, I think it could be a lot more fun as far as Cage of Death goes and a lot more, you know, action-packed and quick. And, you know, I don't know. That's just, again, my personal preference. Both of these matches have the potential to be really good, all talented dudes. So I'm looking forward to, you know, both tag matches. Danny Havoc versus Ricky Shane Page. I mean, you know, I hope for the best in this one. I really do. It's about time they brought Ricky Shane Page back. He got a please come back chance at Tournament of Death. Him and Danny had the best match of Tournament of Death. You, to a certain extent, you're painting yourself into a corner here because you're looking to outdo or live up to a certain standard of a match that he already put on, you know, in Tournament of Death. You're limited in the Flyer Escape Zone, obviously, without the light tubes and all of that stuff. But, you know, it's good to see Ricky Shane Page back. Danny Havoc's one of the best deathmatch wrestlers in the business. And these guys have, you know, definitely the potential to absolutely kill it out there because, you know, they did it once at Tournament of Death, and they could definitely do it again. Looking forward to this match, and I really, really hope that they continue to book Ricky Shane Page after this, that it's not another standout performance, and then going forward to when is he going to be booked again? Who fucking knows? I mean, when you book a guy, I would think your goal is to get them over with the fans and have the fans like the guy that you're booking. And when the fans are all about the guy that you're fucking booking to the point of chanting, please come back, and then you don't bring him back for half of a year, then, you know, again, if you can't point to these things as some of the disappointments that CZW fans have, you're presenting something to the fans, and when they go, we like that, you go, fuck you, we're not giving that to you anymore. And then you force different things like DJ Hyde versus Matt Tremont down people's throats, which, you know, if you still see screenshots of DJ Hyde versus Matt Tremont at the Flyer Escape Zone, and you could see half of the crowd sitting there like they're taking a shit. Like, that's the look they have on their face. Not like, oh my God, I'm fucking amazed. A bunch of people standing on their feet fucking, you know, marking out for how crazy this fucking match is. It's a bunch of people looking like they're taking a shit or reading a fucking newspaper in the morning. Or both. You know what I mean? Or sitting on the bus. That's what these motherfuckers look like. They got like a half-hour bus ride, and they're sitting on the fucking thing. That's what DJ Hyde matches are like, a fucking bus ride. That's it. You know what I mean? You just got to fucking sit there until it's over, and then you can go fucking do whatever you was going to do next. You know, maybe watch an entertaining match or some other shit. He's the fucking bus rider wrestling. Fuck out of here. So this is what you get instead of the guys that fans are fucking chanting, please come back, please come back. And DJ's like, oh, I don't know, maybe, you know. And it's funny, too, because I actually I saw DJ and, you know, those guys had their old table at the Jersey All-Pro show. And, you know, my friend said, hey, Ricky Shane Page, you know, when are you going to come back to CZW? And said to DJ, like, why don't you book him? And he turns to Ricky Shane Page as if he has no idea that this is even, like, a thing. And he's like, because you see, they want you back. And I said, get the fuck out. You know goddamn well when they're standing in your crowd screaming, please come back, That's what they fucking wanted. And then you turn around and play dumb fucking 6 months later, like, oh, you hear that? Like, get the fuck out of here. I mean, you can play stupid all you want, but you cost yourself money. You know what I mean? If the fans aren't fucking happy, it's on you. So, I don't know. It just fucking irritates me. Joe Gacy versus Tim Donce. I said before, I'm not a Tim Donce fan. I just don't know, man. I mean, if I haven't been happy with anything Donce has done outside of the Donce Janela match. I like that match a lot. Janela fucking bumped like an animal and really made Donce look like a killer in that match. Him versus Gacy, I don't know, man. I like Gacy, but you know, I've seen these guys wrestle each other before, and it did zero for me. So this is a last man standing match or I quit match. It's an I quit match. So I'm hoping they quit this feud following this match because I've had enough of that. Next up is the Joey Janela versus Lio Rush rematch for the Wired title, the bullshit title. Should be the junior heavyweight title. But this was a great fucking match. Probably the best match of the show from last month. So, I mean, I expect nothing but top-notch shit out of these two. Two dudes who are absolutely the future. And, you know, the present. I almost just hate saying the word future. I did the shit earlier with EYFBO. And when you see these guys, you know, tearing it up like that, it's really the present. Because you want to see these guys wrestle all the other top guys in the business right now. So it's really the present. They'll be around for quite some time, so you get that future element in there or whatever you want to call it. But Lio Rush and Joey Janela are just tremendous athletes, and they're just going to go in there and kill it at Cage of Death. Like I said, TV Ready and Team Tremendous is the other tag match I'm looking forward to. Again, it could be a four-way. I think I'd like that better, but it is what it is. Again, these guys are they're going to tear it up. And then you got the main event, which is Matt Tremont, Masada, A.R. Fox, and Devin Moore. And, hey, man, what can you say? Devin Moore is the fucking jack of all trades. He's a guy who can wrestle any type of match, any type of style. You know, he's star-pressed off of the heights of, you know, tangled webs and scaffolds here and there. And King of the Death, Cage of Death. Tournament of Death. I mean, you put him in anything, especially if it has death in it, Dev is fucking down, man. And that dude, like I said, he always shows up for this type of shit. A.R. Fox is just, he's one of the most just suicidal high flyers, you know, I guess I'd call it. I mean, he really has no regard for his own body when it comes to high flying and just risk taking. And the dude is, he's a top-notch entertainer. The dude really knows how to go out there, put his body on the line, and just give everything to the fans as far as, you know, just leaving it all out there and, you know, giving people a show. Masada, one of the best deathmatch wrestlers in the world. Now, I mentioned Danny Havoc earlier. I mean, when you're talking about the best deathmatch wrestlers in the world, as far as America goes, you're talking about a handful of guys. And a Danny Havoc, a Masada, a Matt Tremont, those are those type of guys. And obviously you have Matt Tremont, who is, you know, the CZW world champion, best promo guy in CZW, and, you know, overall just he put CZW on his fucking back. When it came down to CZW's identity being anything remotely close to what it used to be, the guy that put it on his fucking back when Gage was in prison, when everybody else went away, people got contracts, people were looking for a face, it was Matt Tremont. I mean, the stupidest fucking thing they did was try to turn him fucking heel amongst everybody else walking out the door. They fucking, that shit didn't last long at all because the crowd still popped for him. No matter what he went out there and did, no matter what he said to those people, it didn't matter. Because when it came right down to it, Matt Tremont was still Matt Tremont. And that was the fans' guy. And I mean, that was the guy that the fans were all about because he has that emotion. He has that passion for CZW and the way that CZW once was. So Matt Tremont is always going to give you 100%. And, you know, he's always going to have that that old-school CZW mentality of knowing, you know, the limits that it's going to take and the extremes to push because, you know, he was one of those fans in the Van Dyke era and all of that. You know, when CZW was CZW. Now it's like everything else with a little bit of ultraviolence. Yeah, so they got that. They got the Dojo Wars thing. It's like 2 p.m. They got like a meet and greet at 1 p.m. I don't know, man. They want motherfuckers out there at the skate zone for like 13 hours or some crazy shit like this. I ain't fucking with you, you know what I mean? I got kids and all that. I'll be there at 8 o'clock when the fucking night show starts. And I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be a great night out. I love Cage of Death. So I'm excited for that. So definitely go, you know, check that out on iPay-Per-View if you don't get to see it live. If you're going live, whatever, you know, holler at me, man. Say hi or some shit, all right? I think that's about all I got. You know,
real quick, the NFL, man, I like the way Blaine Gabbert's looking out there. I'll tell you straight up, man, I was a cap guy and all that. But listen, this kid, he is looking fucking awesome out there. He's really no Beckham. He's he's playing great fucking football, man. He's making things happen with his legs. Everyone wanted to talk about how fast Cap was and this and this. And, you know, Blaine Gabbert broke off the longest fucking rushing play from our team this season. Ran for a fucking touchdown. You know what I mean? Just fucking broke it off. No problem. Made fucking move. Bombed in the fucking, in the overtime. Bombed the fucking pass down the field, hit Torrey Smith. The thing, and Cap hit Torrey once, I believe, this season for a long ball. But what Torrey Smith's expected value was the long ball. The guy that's going to burn somebody downfield and is going to be open down there somewhere. He's going to take advantage of you know, missed coverage and shit. And that's what he did. They completely blew coverage. Torrey Smith blew it open, and fucking Blaine Gabbert hit him right on the fucking numbers, and bam, fucking won the game. That's Blaine Gabbert has been able to do this type of shit for the 49ers right now. The team's behind him. He's fired up. He's actually younger than Cap. So when it comes down to it, we're not talking about a lot of downside on what Gabbert's doing. And, you know, Gabbert was a guy that people wanted to count out of the league. Why? Because he sucked in Jacksonville. Jacksonville sucked. So, I mean, what does that mean? If you don't get a surrounding team around you, and then, you know, I mean, he had a couple, you know, learning years or whatever. But I don't know, man. Right now, I'm thinking Gabbert's our guy. In the draft, we need to do a bunch of other big things, but I don't think quarterback's one of them. You know, let Cap, you know, fight for the job. Let him do some competition, whatever. You know, if you could restructure his contract and maybe sit Cap fucking second string. I don't know. Maybe he's going to go get a starting job somewhere else. I'm not really sure. But even Joe Montana co-signed it and said, you know, the 49ers should not let Blaine Gabbert get away. Like, don't, you know, sleep on this guy and then just, you know, give the job to Cap or somebody else. You know, definitely put this guy in the mix for possible starter next year. This guy's the truth. And, yeah, I think he'll show that for the rest of the season. We got a bunch of big games coming up. We got Cleveland next. So this should be a game we're easily competitive at. And following that, man, we got the Bengals, which is one of the best teams in the fucking league. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing what else goes on. Obviously, we're out of playoff contention. That's no problem, man. I know, I already knew that shit. And then it's all looking forward to next year. So that's that. The Eagles beat the fucking the Pats. The Pats are so banged up, man, it's ridiculous. Tom Brady has just been picking the next receiver and throwing to him. He's got Gronk out. He's got Edelman out. He had Amendola out. I mean, you just go down the list of wide receivers, and motherfuckers might as well just start making reservations in the hospital because the next guy up gets hurt. He just throws to the next guy, the next guy. And he's been a beast to keep the fucking winning streak going, but eventually the bottom had to fall out a little bit. And that's what happened, man. A couple big, big plays out of the Eagles. They returned. I think they returned a pick or fucking something and then blocked a kick. And I mean, they did make some really big plays to really get themselves out ahead. They still only wound up beating the Pats by a touchdown because, man, the Pats, you know, they have that fucking never-say-die attitude, and they're able to put up some fucking late game points. But they're going to bounce back, and the Eagles are going to fall off. So, I mean, don't get that fucked up and think, oh, well, watch out for the Eagles. Man, watch out for shit, man. They're fucking garbage. The NFC East is fucking garbage, and the Pats are just fucking refueling, getting healthy, and they are the most dangerous team in fucking football right now. So, I'm still, like I said, I'm still rooting for the Bengals in the AFC and the Panthers, who are still undefeated in the NFC. I hope they go completely undefeated. And fuck, man, I hope the Panthers and the fucking Bengals wind up in the Super Bowl together. And I think it'll be a tremendously entertaining Super Bowl. You get a bunch of fans that are super hyped that their team is finally up in there. And, you know what I mean? I don't know. I would like that quite a bit. Some new faces in there. Not the fucking Pats again. Not the fucking She-Hawks in there again. Fuck the motherfuckers. They're out of there, man.
if they make it to the playoffs, they're getting fucking dropped first round. I'm willing to make a bet on that shit. So fuck them. But then again, you know, they could wind up against the NFC East team, wild card up against the NFC East team, and again, the NFC East is garbage. You wind up with the fucking Seahawks in the second round just by default there. But that means they wind up usually lined up with the first round bye teams, and that's when they're getting fucking squashed. So it's what it is. You know, even though my team isn't in it, I'm looking forward to playoff football. It's right around the corner. And, yeah, so that's pretty much that. I don't know what else to talk about. I think I'm pretty much good. So, yeah, like I said, DK to death. If you want, I will have out in the car, we'll have the I'm a John Zander guy T-shirts. So get yours, man. I'm not fucking lugging these joints to every show. So this is, you know, the opportunity to get them for $20. Beyond that, for the most part, I'm keeping them at home, and I'm willing to ship them out, you know, but it's going to cost you $25, you know, for $5 for shipping or whatever. But it is what it is. Like I said, I'm not a pushy dude. I'm not going to be fucking running around asking people if they want a fucking shirt at the show. You're not going to hear that out of me. So if you want one, come hit me up, is what it is. All right. Let me find my fucking outro. Yeah, like I especially label this shit, and it's always still ridiculously hard to find every week. So, all right, here it is. Check out the Sports Den. I believe they're on tonight, talking about all sorts of shit. Check out Andrew Carluck. He doesn't do Stern Nation right now for quite some time. You know, he does all sorts of things. He's got a show called General Jackassery. And all sorts of shit. So check them out. And, yeah, I think that's all I got for now. So talk to you guys next week. The CZW review, Cage of Death review. Who knows if I have a guest or not. Not really sure. I haven't planned anything yet. But, yeah, talk to you guys later, Bruce.
We're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what am I making you? Good? You're not good. You just know how to hide. A lot. Me, I don't have that part. Me, I always tell the truth. Even when I lie. So say goodnight to the bad guy.
I'm going to tell you something straight out the motherfucking press. I ain't coming for no food.
What the father fucking fuck? Fuck this father fucker. This shit is wasting my time.
DJ Hyde, fuck you.